From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 21st day of February 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. We'll take a deep dive into the agricultural news for the day. WOTUS is back in the news. We'll talk about the new administrator at US EPA. We'll also discuss the agricultural markets with Steve Johnson, Iowa State Farm Management Specialist, and take a look at the weather forecast, too. That was Don Day, a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And I'll tell you how to get your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. It is 2 weeks away now, 2 weeks from today, over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Stay with us to learn more on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 21st day of February. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, urging you to go right now to our website, willag.org, or to pick up the phone and dial this number, 800-898-1065. We're just 2 weeks away from the All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll have a dozen of our regular on-air analysts, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, there. And Wayne has made each and every one of these events since 1991. Generally, Wayne, when we ask, you're the only one in the room that's been to all of them. Thanks for being there for WILL over, more than 25 years now.
Yeah, and it's been a lot of fun every year. It's great to see all the listeners and great to get to talk to everybody. And boy, what a day. I learned a whole lot. And I hope everybody else that attends sure feels that way, too. So besides that, awfully good food.
Yeah, awfully good food. And for the $30, it includes your noon Beef House lunch, roll and coffee in the morning, too. We better get to what's happening in the marketplace. It seemed like it was a pretty dreary day, although soybeans did manage a 6-cent loss. Why?
Well, I think, you know, overnight we surprisingly was looking at pretty much of a steady type trade. The calls going into last night, the Chinese seemed to be in the market in speculative buying last night. We come in, you know, before the break this morning while we were up in both corn and beans. And we come back, absence of the funds buying. In fact, they were sellers of 3,000 beans on the day, 1,000 meal in 2,000 oil and 4,000 corn and 2,000 wheat. So I think that tells us a little bit of why we sunk back down on the beans was lack of fund buying, in fact, some fund selling.
What are you hearing about the South American harvest at this time?
You know, it's progressing really good. They're continuing to do well. There wasn't as much rain down in Argentina to cause any more damage over the weekend, and it looks like they're just going to continue to probably inch back a little bit higher than what they maybe had taken off to begin with down there in that area. So the bean harvest looks very, very good. We keep hearing rumblings about Mexico going to South America to look for opportunities to buy corn. I think that Bunge sort of rebuked some of that, saying that we can still sell it to them cheaper because of our freight advantage.
Anything else that we ought to talk about before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, there was a bearish daily reversal lower in the November beans, so we're going to have to watch them awful careful to see. Maybe tomorrow being the second day of trading, we'll see a little turnaround Tuesday for the beans.
All right.
Or turnaround Wednesday, or turnaround Thursday.
It is the second trading day of the week, so we'll go with turnaround Wednesday. Thanks so much, Wayne, and look forward to having you over at the Beef House.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities at Newmarket, Indiana, and will join us on the 7th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, along with 11 other of the analysts that we have on air. Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, will be with us throughout the day, and the folks in the Gardner Agricultural Policy Center. It's all at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. We'll kick off at 8 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. in the Eastern Time Zone, wrap up around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, depending on which side of the state line you live on. Tickets are just $30. You can get them online now at willag.org or 800-898-1065 during regular business hours. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with the RFS, ethanol and biofuels. A bipartisan group of lawmakers has begun discussing how to craft a compromise to update the decade-old rules governing the nation's biofuel market and hope to draft a bill this summer. ProEnergy's Eric Wolf reports. Ethanol and oil industry sources say they've met with Representatives John Shimkus from Illinois, Bill Flores of Texas, and Peter Welch of Vermont on an overhaul of the renewable fuel standard, but automakers believed to be a key to the deal have not yet come to the table. This is going to be very hard to do, Shimkus tells Wolf. Sometimes I think we can get there, and sometimes I think this will be very hard to do. RFS reform is a particularly thorny issue for Congress to tackle because it pits two of the most powerful business groups, agriculture and the oil industry, against each other and does not follow traditional party splits on energy matters. But House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California said changes to the RFS will be on the House docket this Congress, giving the effort a political boost. Well, this week, the Senate Agriculture Committee is headed to Kansas State University, Chairman Pat Roberts' alma mater. He's the class of 1958, by the way. On Thursday, for the first of several field hearings that will be held across the country to review what needs to be done in the next farm bill. While the witness list has not been released, expect testimony to focus on the concerns of conventional commodity farmers. Kansas, of course, is a big producer of wheat and other grains, and those farmers tend to want strong crop insurance programs and crop supports, as well as protections for trade, which could take a renewed importance in the farm bill given the Trump administration's trade agenda and recent moves. The hearing is set to begin at 2 o'clock Central Time at Kansas State in the McCain Auditorium. Also happening this week, everybody's favorite collection of ag economists, commodity officials, and policy wonks will gather at the end of the week for USDA's annual look ahead for the farm economy. The Outlook Conference will take place in Arlington, Virginia, and feature remarks from USDA Chief Economist Robert Johansen, former Iowa governor, and Trump's pick for ambassador to China, Terry Branstad, and House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway. Not on the agenda, Sonny Perdue. The former Georgia governor is one of just four cabinet-level nominees not to have undergone a confirmation hearing in committee. The others are Robert Lighthizer for USTR, Dan Coats for Director of National Intelligence, and Alexander Acosta, who was nominated on Thursday to replace Andrew Pudzer for Labor Secretary. Well, as to what will happen at the Outlook, the news probably won't be particularly good. U.S. farm income is down 45% from 4 years ago, thanks to low crop prices, slowing trade, and mounting surpluses. On the subject of trade, lawmakers representing agriculture expressed some concerns last week regarding a possible 20% border tax on goods from Mexico. The potential tax is billed by President Donald Trump as a way to pay for a border wall between the two nations. Republican Representative Bob Gibbs of Ohio questioned agricultural economists on the impact the tax could have on the sector during a House Ag Committee hearing last week. Pat Westhoff, the director of the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, we normally call that FAPRI, it's at the University of Missouri, responded saying any border tax will have implications on agriculture.
Clearly, what happens on taxation of anything that crosses borders will have implications, and you can expect that there will be discussions internationally about them.
Arkansas Republican Representative Rick Crawford raised concerns that Mexico would retaliate to any border tax imposed by the United States, adding Mexico is not waiting to retaliate. A Mexican senator, of course, recently announced consideration of a bill that would direct Mexico to stop buying corn from the U.S. and purchase the commodity from other sellers. Westhoff says, however, that if Mexico should stop buying U.S. corn, the impact may not be as bad as you think.
What's very important is to remember that we have a global corn market, and certainly we have lots of advantages of selling our corn into Mexico, and that's hugely important to our industry. It's also true that if you just rearrange trade patterns, the net effect on the corn market may not be all that huge. You know, if we sell products to countries that Brazil formerly sold things to, and Brazil picked up the Brazilian market, the effect on the corn market is not as large as if Mexico just disappeared from the corn market entirely.
A Crawford represents a district in Arkansas that accounts for 25% of U.S. rice production, and Mexico is the top buyer of the state's commodity. He is concerned any potential retaliations would harm the trade of rice. Members of the House Agriculture Committee explored the topic during a pre-farm bill hearing on the farm economy last Wednesday. Well, let's come back to the here and now. Today in Washington, D.C., the new administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency addressed his staff. He quoted Scottish-American naturalist John Muir, who once said, "Everybody needs beauty, and everybody needs bread, and everybody needs a place to pray in and to play in." And then Scott Pruitt went on.
I really believe that we can be better as a country. I believe that we as an agency and we as a nation can be both pro-energy and jobs and pro-environment, that we don't have to choose between the two. I think our nation has done better than any nation in the world at making sure that we do the job of protecting our natural resources and protecting our environment while also respecting the economic growth and jobs our nation seeks to have. And I hope that as we journey together, that we will establish places to pray in and places to play in for our citizens and do the very important work as an agency.
That was the newly installed U.S. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt addressing his staff for the very first time earlier today. And finally, a couple of other items from the Trump administration. The Washington Post says the administration is expected to release a couple of extra executive orders. One of those orders, which should be couched as reducing U.S. dependence on other countries for energy, will instruct the Environmental Protection Agency to begin rewriting the 2015 regulation that limits greenhouse gas emissions from existing electric utilities. It also instructs the Interior Department's Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, to lift a moratorium on federal coal leasing. A second order will instruct the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers to revamp a 2015 rule known as the Waters of the U.S. Rule, or WOTUS, that applies to 60% of the water bodies in the country. That regulation was issued under the 1972 Clean Water Act, which gives the federal government authority over not only major water bodies, but also wetlands, rivers, and streams that feed into them. It affects development as well as some farming operations on the grounds that these activities could pollute the smaller or intermittent bodies of water that flow into the major ones. Trump has joined many industry groups in criticizing these rules as examples of the federal government exceeding its authority and curbing economic growth. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Have you picked up your tickets yet for the All-Day Ag Outlook? It's only a couple of weeks away now, two in fact. On March the 7th, we'll be at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll start at 8 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. in the Eastern Time Zone with a great day. If you've not ever been there, we'll have a dozen of our regular on-air analysts. Todd Hubbs will be with us on that day. He's the agricultural economist here at the University of Illinois, and we'll take up farm policy, all really important stuff for this 2017 growing season, and a great way to get yourself set for the new year. Now, you have to have a ticket to come. You can get that online at willag.org, willag.org. It's just $30, or by calling this phone number right now, 800-898-1065, really during regular business hours, Monday through Friday, 800-898-1065. The day's event will wrap up around 2 o'clock in the Central Time Zone, so we'll start about 8, we'll finish around 2, 9 and 3 if you're in the Eastern Time Zone. Don't miss it. Get your tickets right now. If you're listening last week, you know that I was hosting the Illinois Soybean Summit on Thursday in Peoria. Thanks to the Illinois Soybean Association for inviting me to do that. One of the folks that joined us up on stage was from Iowa State, farm management specialist Steve Johnson. You probably heard his name. I had a chance to talk with him after the fact. I asked him just exactly what it was he was hoping soybean growers, farmers in Illinois would hear from him.
Short-term bearish, long-term bullish. You know, I think a lot of times, Todd, we get caught up in what am I going to do to make money in 2017? But I think farmers need to have a bigger picture. They buy farmland that they're going to farm for 100 years and buy a tractor they'll probably have for 50. I think we have to keep in mind that we've got a growing global population. We've likely got more demand for our products, especially red meats and dairy products. And I believe this economy, ag economy, is going to be much improved as we get out into 19, 20, 21. We need to work through all of these large ending stocks. And we're only a drought away from $5 corn and $12 beans, but we don't want the drought to be here. We want the drought to be somewhere other than Illinois. So again, I think my message is pull it in, make sure that you've got a plan for profitability in 2017. But I think the ag economy is improving. You can see it from most of the surveys. And I'm coming from Iowa, and I can tell you Iowa farmer attitudes are the best that I've probably seen in 2 or 3 years.
So we've got better attitudes. However, we hear from the western parts of the Corn Belt, from the Dakotas especially, that they really are in some difficult times, that when they go to their bankers this spring, they're not finding their bankers as amenable to making operating loans. Do we see those kinds of problems in parts of Iowa? I know that there are some places in Illinois that they'll have some difficulties.
Yeah, you know, I use the 20-80 rule. 80% of farmers that I see in the winter, including South Dakota and Nebraska and Kansas, they're in pretty good shape financially. They have some of their best balance sheets. But if you didn't have the crop, you didn't do a good job of marketing the 16 crop, you're trying to store your way to prosperity or basis. You know, this basis is a dollar under for beans in South Dakota. And I don't think a lot of Illinois farmers realize that you've got some of the best corn and soybean basis in the Corn Belt. And so I think Iowa farmers overall kind of mirror what I see as a positive attitude and looking forward to 2017. And in the next 2 days, the shop doors are going to fly open, and that changes a lot of attitudes.
The Western Corn Belt tends to store more of their grain than the Eastern Corn Belt does. In this year, it's clear that after the big crops, there's more corn stored all across the Midwest than ever before. You said you can't store your way to prosperity, at least in this year. Do you think they should be making old crop sales?
I think a typical Iowa farmer is probably sitting on 50 to 60% of their corn crop from last year. And so there's where I think the caution is. I think we're going to see basis in Iowa for corn is about 5 to 10 cents wider, a wider basis than we typically see until you get to the river. Where's the best cash corn prices in Iowa? Close to the Mississippi. So again, it reflects the fact that Illinois farmers should not take for granted. They've got a very attractive basis, but those financial problems you talk about in Dakota, those bushels are at the co-ops and elevators. There's part of the problem. They're going to end up giving 30 to 60 cents a bushel to the co-op and elevator, and they're going to be forced into likely selling into that wide basis. I think pay attention to bean basis. Again, we've never seen basis as wide as what we see right now in the month of February.
Will this cause a difference in the projected change in acreage coming for this year? Right now, most believe there will be 4 million extra acres of soybeans this year than last.
I'm in that camp. You know, when you shift 2 million acres away from corn, most of those acres are likely going to be sitting in the Corn Belt and some of our better growing land. But when you look at where the winter wheat, 3.7 million acres of winter wheat didn't get planted, smallest winter wheat crop since 1909, there's where the beans are at. The beans are sitting in the Dakotas, western Nebraska, western Kansas, southern Missouri. The western belt is where we're going to pick up, and I think you're right. I'm using the number 4 to 5 million more bean acres. I'm encouraging farmers to have a plan for marketing new crop beans, and typical farmer that I've seen, over half the farmers have already priced some new crop soybeans. Some Illinois farmers have already sold 40 to 50% of their 17 bean crop, and I'm not saying that's wrong. I really like the fact that you bid in the uncertainty of South American weather, but we're going to bring a lot of bean acres, record bean acreage planting, but we might not know that final number until June 30.
That's Steve Johnson of Iowa State Extension. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's the 21st day of February. Feels a whole lot more like it could be the 21st day of, well, not March, but I suppose April Dawn Day of day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Boy, what a strange weather system we've had for the last week and a half. And it looks like we're going to be warm here in the Midwest all the way through the end of the week. What can you tell me?
Well, yeah, a lot of times I always have to remind people that it's not unusual in midwinter to get a break. It's like the halftime in a football game. You know, you have the first half of winter, you get a break, everybody goes to the locker room, and then we come back out for the second half. So that's how we sort of need to view this recent spell of mild weather that really has dominated the last 2 weeks, really from the Rockies east with these above normal temperatures, spring-like conditions, a lot of spring fevers going around. But this weekend, next week, the following week, while we don't see cold coming in and staying, we do see a lot of up and down. And there's going to be more downs than up as we look at several systems coming through, as there's going to be a wholesale change in the jet stream pattern. The same pattern that's resulted in the mild weather is going to change, and that will cause other changes down the road.
And what kind of highs are we looking for, and when will they be low enough that we'll notice?
Well, I certainly expect that the first salvo of noticeably cold temperatures will be coming in this weekend. As we get into Saturday and Sunday, we're going to see at least a 20 to 30 degree drop in temperatures from where they are now. And then that's going to stay chilly through the early parts of next week, and then mid to late next week, another system will come on through. And by Wednesday, Thursday of the following week, next week, we are going to be looking at temperatures getting colder. Now, there's going to be warm-ups in between these cold episodes, which is typical as we get into March, as we get a little bit of an up and down pattern there. But do expect more episodes of cold coming this last 2 weeks, not an indication of what March is going to be like.
Take me to the southern hemisphere now and tell me about conditions in the growing regions there.
Well, as we go into Brazil, first of all, Brazil is probably the area that's going to have the best chance of being wet and also the coolest of the two growing areas. Nothing excessively cold or excessively wet, but they are going to be a little bit wetter than Argentina. Argentina, on the flip side, looks to be drier and warmer, a bit below normal with precipitation and above normal temperatures in Argentina, cause some high evaporation rates. So Argentina drying out a bit.
Hey, thanks, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to pick up your tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's just 2 weeks away now on the 7th day of March, two Tuesdays from now, over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The $30 includes your morning coffee and a roll, the midday lunch, and all day long we'll talk to the agricultural brokers and commodities and analysts that you hear. More than a dozen of them. Mike Zuzlow's coming in. Dan Zwicker will be in. They're the farthest away, but everybody else should be there too. We'll also take up farm policy, and we'll do the weather. We'll do the weather with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible right here on campus. Don't miss it. Tickets are available online now at willag.org or by dialing 800-898-1065. I'm Todd Gleason.